Welcome to another episode of Cosmic Echo, a Tailor podcast. This podcast applies a scientific viewpoint on the strange and bizarre phenomenon that happens in our lives when we sleep in altered states. In this episode, we speak with Ryan Herr. He runs dreamstudies.org. We have spoken before with Ryan, but this time we go more into his research behind lucid dreaming and dreams in general. Ryan also talks with us about his newest book, Lucid Immersion Guidebook, a holistic blueprint for lucid dreaming. If you'd like to learn more about Ryan's work, you can visit our website at taileaters.com/CE podcast. Also, you can support the podcast by going to the same website and clicking on our Patreon page. Well, without further ado, let's get to the interview. How are you doing today, Ryan?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. It's glad to hear from you again. Get into it. We spoke with you before in the past, but can you give us a little background of yourself and your dream work?
Sure, yeah. So, these days I've been calling myself a dream educator. I've really been focusing on helping people work with their nightmares, their sleep paralysis nightmares, and most recently getting them into learning lucid dreaming and taking them deeper into lucid dreaming. And, by trade, I'm a writer. My methodology tends to be phenomenology when I actually write peer-reviewed stuff. And, when I look at my big picture of what I'm trying to do with my work is kind of bring back the intuitive arts into this post-rational world, kind of waking up these parts of ourselves that we've kind of swept under the rug in our scientific materialistic culture.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit about your education background a little bit? I noticed you have a master's. Is that right?
I've got a master's degree in consciousness studies.
Oh, okay.
At John F. Kennedy University, and very fun program. It's a mishmash of philosophy, psychology, and religion studies. And I have a background in anthropology and archaeology.
Oh, okay.
So for myself, I really focused kind of on psychological anthropology when I went through the program, and even applying that towards psychological archaeology as well. I've got, tiny little interest in, I say tiny because there's about five other people in the world who also are interested in this, of seeing how altered states of consciousness show up on the material record and looking back at prehistoric peoples and kind of, a lot of it is more of an art than a science at this point. But trying to say, well, we share the same brain. These people took naps. How does this all work out in terms of their sleeping and their states of consciousness and how that affected their culture, and how can you see that on the material record? So that's also kind of part of my background as well.
Oh, okay, great. Talking about your new book here. So can you tell us a little bit of an intro about this book and the differences between this book and other lucid dreaming books that you've written before, or other lucid dreaming books that you have read and worked with in the past?
Sure, yeah. It's a digital kit that I produced, and I call it the Lucid Immersion Blueprint. And it's a collection of e-books and audio recordings in which I interviewed some other lucid dreaming contemporaries of mine. I consider it an advanced guide to lucid dreaming. What I was noticing is that there's plenty of guides to getting into lucid dreaming, how to do it, how to get started, but there's almost nothing on the market about kind of the deeper waters and getting past those first exhilarating moments. And then what happens when sometimes lucid dreaming doesn't behave exactly as you might wish, and how to sort of come to terms with that and work with the dream and the dreaming imagination to really benefit from this wisdom that sometimes comes, it seems like not in our best interest, but it actually is. And that's just part of the psychology of the dreaming mind. So that was my motivation for writing this book and making this project available is picking people up when they've fallen down from frustrations from lucid dreaming, either by not being able to achieve what they want to achieve or not having as many lucid dreams as they wish, or for the minority of people out there who start getting the lucid dreaming and they have really disturbing experiences and nightmarish experiences. Mm. Bringing that to light about how this can actually be an opportunity for healing.
Okay. And what do you mean by healing in that sense through lucid dreaming?
Well, you know, there's something... The door with the most pressure behind it opens first.
Mm.
This is something that happens with dreaming in general, and it happens in lucid dreams as well. And often people get into lucid dreams who are interested in controlling their dreams and doing kind of whatever they want in their own virtual reality, which is a very fun perspective, but it's, what happens is when you actually get into the dream space, this doesn't really pan out all of the time. And you realize that you're still there, and there's a lot of kind of things happening under the cover of darkness once you're in this, you know, imaginal realm. And so when I say an opportunity for healing, I mean that there are often conflicts that occur in lucid dreams that are just opportunities to face something, face some fears, face hesitations, and, you know, and for some people this is facing the past or, you know, maybe facing something that's unpleasant about their present predicament. And rather than running away from it or trying to crush it or transform it into a bunny, you know, really take a look and dialogue with what's going on. And something amazing happens in these instances, which is that there's an energetic flow that occurs between, you know, we can say the unconscious mind and the conscious mind. It's kind of arbitrary, but that which you know and that which you don't know. And things open up, things loosen up, and it's like all this energy pours into you, and courage and creativity. And in my own life, it's really affected my waking life, and I think it's really changed my personality and kind of forged my identity and kind of my interests and allowed me to do what I do.
Oh, great. In your book, you talk about building the foundation of lucid dreaming. What exactly do you mean by that, by chance?
I think there's basically three prerequisites for going into lucid dreaming safely and securely. And most people only talk about two, and I talk about three. But the two ones that everyone talks about is you need to have basically got to get your sleep hygiene under control. You know, lucid dreaming, consciousness in dreams, tends to occur in REM sleep, and you've got to usually have really long sections of REM in order to get to these states. It tends to happen in the morning when our cortisol levels are higher and we're sort of in this almost fugue state between dreaming and waking. At least that's how Alan Hobson and his colleagues talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're not getting enough sleep and you live in, you know, the Western culture, which is completely sleep deprived, it can be actually be difficult to give yourself time to even, you know, get there.
Mm-hmm.
I discussed sleep hygiene and the importance of just being able to get into it, give yourself the mental and physical space to have a lucid dream. And for some people, this is different for everybody, actually, because some people are light sleepers and they just basically need to allow themselves to have the time to sleep in. For others who are deep sleepers who don't remember a lot of dreams, they might have to do something more extreme, like change their sleep patterns, involving more awakening, things like that, to kind of stir up the vigilance levels that allow dream recall to take place. And this is it, and that's the second piece of this. The second prerequisite is the dream recall. And once you have the foundation of sleep, then you start looking at, you've got to have good dream recall to become consciously aware in your dreams, because otherwise there's nothing to work with.
Right.
And, you know, the good news is that dream recall comes back really quickly. Dreaming and remembering dreams is a skill. It's a cognitive skill. And all it takes is really some attention during the waking life to basically build bridges between our dreaming self and our waking self. And it's interesting. It happens in a number of days for some people. Some people it takes a little longer. But once you start recording your dreams, and doing some of these other tactics that I discussed in the book about kind of inviting dreams back into your life. The recall increases, and the dreams themselves transform. They become clearer and longer and sort of more understandable. There's actually a shift in the dream content that's remembered itself as you pay attention to your dreams. And then the third one, which for me is a prerequisite, and others say, whatever. But for me, as I teach lucid dreaming, I think it's completely a necessary ethical step, which is that, is this a good timing to get into lucid dreaming for you at this point in your life? And the reason I say this is that lucid dreaming is an altered state of consciousness, and things do come up that are unexpected, and you want to be mentally prepared for this, and you want to be in a secure place in your life. I don't recommend that people who are just starting, for instance, a psychotherapy program, or who just had a death in the family or a major life change, that they try to pursue lucid dreaming actively. Because actually, in some of these, you know, times in our life, you know, these crossroads, lucid dreams will come on their own accord. And it's best at this time to just let the dreams come to you rather than really kind of go for the gold. And so that's the question I ask. Is this, you know, do you have support in your life? Do you have the time to even, like, process the things that happen? And you know, this is, I consider lucid dreaming a psycho-spiritual activity. And, you know, all of yourself is on board. And you're really just kind of selling yourself short if you're not preparing for some of these unexpected challenges and discoveries that happen with lucid dreaming, the spontaneous elements of lucid dreaming that can be quite intense and also exciting. But I think many people just don't know that this is coming, and they're blindsided by it. And, I mean, this happened to me, and I know lots of people that this happened to, where they started lucid dreaming spontaneously or got into it, and they just got a little freaked out, a little too fast, and they lost all interest completely in looking at lucid dreaming and looking at dreams in general. And that, I think, is a shame, you know? And so it's just about, that's my perspective, and, you know, I say, hey, just ground yourself and be ready to have the support system lined up. And that's my three prerequisites. Good sleep habits, good dream recall, and is this the right time?
That totally makes sense to me. The title of your book has holistic in it. I was just wondering exactly kind of what you meant by that, unless you already touched on it.
Well, you know, I just said, when I just said that all of our self is on board, that touches on it a little bit. And I really mean that, you know, our emotional self, you know, our logical and mental self, and also you know, our psycho-spiritual self, or, you know, the higher nature of ourself, however you see it. You know, your goals and aspirations, but also your belief systems towards the divine, towards the nature of reality, towards your place and purpose in the universe, because all of these belief systems play a role in the creation of dreams, and inversely, in your greatest fears. And when you have an understanding of where you're at, these things aren't so weird and so scary. Because a dream can really shift your perspective of what reality is, and it challenges your perspective of reality. And it's nice to kind of, these challenges are awesome, because we learn from them, and we can let go of belief systems, we can expand our belief systems, or we can reinforce them. It's really up to us and our own process and kind of where we are in life. So when I say holistic, I really mean, you know, mind, body, and soul.
Okay.
You know, all of our intelligence, our multiple intelligences.
Okay. You talked about challenging, how lucid dreams challenge you. Can you tell us a little bit about how lucid dreaming has challenged you, yourself, or changed your life?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm unusual, and I realize this, in that I started lucid dreaming when I was young, and went through several periods in my life where I had lots of nightmares. And in the lucid dreams, at every point in my life have helped me with overcoming these nightmares. And I honestly would be a different person if I hadn't had these opportunities to sort of face these challenges head on. From, you know, the fears of, you know, that come when you're changing from 14, 15 years old and really moving into your adult body, to all the fears of young adulthood with who am I and where am I going. And then even now, you know, I take on new roles and responsibilities, like as a father. I, you know, my wife just gave birth, you know, 4 months ago.
Congrats, man.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, and again, you know, here's, you know, life's always changing, and I'm taking on new roles, and my lucid dreams are reflecting this. As I think my last dream, I saved my infant baby as he was clinging to a side of a cliff.
Oh, wow.
you know, it's, well, you know, sometimes these dreams aren't so so hard to decode. And but I've really gotten, I would say, a lot of courage, and the ability to know myself and understand my particular sense of creativity and my particular interests through these dreams, because they come to us as gifts. But sometimes they just have teeth.
How, in what way do you think that lucid dreams can help other people as well? Obviously, it helped your life from what you just told us, but...
Well, you know, lucid dreaming comes naturally to many people, and that's what's really nice about as dreaming is entering into the culture again. Lucid dreaming is almost a household word. I don't quite there yet, but with movies like Avatar, and especially Inception.
Mm-hmm.
Inception, I think, really pushed the envelope and put the concept in front of so many millions of people that it's possible to be consciously aware in your dreams and have a modicum of self-control and even sometimes, you know, the ability to manipulate the dream environment and, you know, go through different layers. I mean, very powerful movie, and it got a lot of things right, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which I also really appreciated about the producers of the movie, because they did their homework. You know, they interviewed Stephen LaBerge, you know, the foremost, you know, researcher in the topic, and others as well.
Wow.
And so, you know, as it turns out, women are more likely to have lucid dreams than men. It seems to be about a 60-40 split.
Hmm.
And the reason is that women remember the dreams more, simply for cultural reasons.
Okay.
Possibly there might be some biological memory associations as well that have to do with the emotional brain, but the research is a little cloudy on that, and we're not really sure. It's a nature-nurture kind of thing, you know. But obviously women in our culture are more allowed to discuss their dreams and what they mean, because dreams are very emotional. Dreams are more about our emotional logic and sort of the emotional mythologies of our life than really anything else. And so for most men in our culture, this is just, you know, you stay away from it. So it's amazing that we remember any dreams at all as men. But men are more interested in lucid dreaming and learning to lucid dream than women, because they have this sort of yang, the temperament of, I want to take this initiative, I want to accomplish a task, you know. Some people call that the desire for control, but I think that that's actually more of a media myth than anything else. It's really about kind of a hunting-like temperament. I want to achieve this particular task, and here's how I want to go about it. And, you know, that's definitely the yang, masculine, you know, traditional masculine temperament. And so that's why so many men are interested in learning lucid dreaming. And at first, you know, I think most people are interested in it for doing things. The two most popular things are the experience of flying, the ecstatic experience of, you know, flying around and going where you wish as if you were a bird. And the second one is having sex. And it must be the safest sex in the world.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to engage safely with your fantasies, and to, you know, have pleasure and ecstasy without implicating another individual, or, you know, really going for stretching your own boundaries of your sexuality. Two very big hot-button issues in learning from lucid dreams. But that's just scratching the surface. I mean, these primary motivations, I found in my experience, give way after lucid dreamers kind of get into the experience, and other things start coming up as well. And these I would call these sort of underlying creative energies that first manifest through sexual energy or the desire to fly.
Hmm.
But then they kind of transmute, and there's other things going on as well. And I think that these might be some of the same powers that come unleashed when you basically do any kind of meditative or spiritual art, in which you're honing your intelligence and your attention span towards essentially being a more mature individual. And taking responsibility for yourself, understanding your own personal sense of power, being in a relationship with other powers around you, and knowing how to be in that dance. You know, it's not all about you, it's about us. You know, being in community and harnessing these energies and all kinds of, you know, depending on just your own temperament, your spiritual background, where you are in life, how old you are, kind of, you know, all these things, they always, you know, come cemented down to individual differences. But in my mind, a lucid dream is an opportunity to essentially to be here now.
Yeah.
And to think and interact with what's happening.
I mean, isn't it like one third of our life is spent asleep, and that's a good portion of our life not understanding what's going on or being aware of it. So I could see that being very important.
Yeah, well, you know, Carl Jung was, used to talk about the process of individuation, about becoming, you know, maturation as an individual, and in particular the maturation of the human soul towards transcendence. And you know, this is a Jungian theory is you know, something that only some psychologists are into. But his perspective, I think, really speaks beyond, you know, this particular institution, which is that he says, you know, this process of maturation is happening regardless of whether you focus on it or not. It's just that focusing on it kind of may allow it to happen more quickly. And it can be more pleasurable, and it can happen in a more controlled manner. You're basically, you're ritualizing your maturation rather than having it happen at spontaneous moments that the world chooses for you. Which could be a stage, or which could be, you know, I mean, the human drama machine.
Right.
And so we are maturing and going through our life and learning and always integrating our whatever just happened to us with our personal mythologies. It's happening anyway. What lucid dreaming offers an opportunity for is to become more of an actor in this, and really to surf it more enjoyably.
You're talking about Carl Jung, and I'm very interested in this shadow idea that he has, and you talk a little bit about it in your book. I'm not sure if you called it the shadow or the dweller in the threshold. I know it's been called that. What do you suggest, and what do you perceive this thing being that people often encounter? Can you describe, you know, maybe a little bit about what it is as well, like what it looks like or resembles, or, you know, just a broad idea of what it is.
Well, I mean, in Carl Jung's perspective, the shadow is an archetype that comes through archetypal imagery. You know, the archetypes themselves, in his reckoning, were never seen. They're just the energies that are behind all forms in our mind. And the shadow is one of his primary archetypes, which manifests as aspects of ourself that we have disowned. That's the primary thing, is that it's, I think the poet Robert Bly says it best, it's the parts of yourself that you've tossed into a bag and, you know, never looked back into that bag. And yet we go through our lives carrying this bag behind us of all these parts of ourselves that can be things that we don't like about ourselves, things that we're ashamed of. They can be early childhood memories that, you know, that just that haunt us because we don't want to deal with it or integrate them. But also, Carl Jung talked about the gold in the shadow, which is this concept, this alchemical concept, that we also toss our bright spots or our genius or our creativity into the bag if it's not socially acceptable. So, you know, the architect's son who wants to be an artist but is forced into, a life that he doesn't find creative. He puts his artistry into the bag. But, you know, by bringing it out of the bag, he could make his architectural world even more creative by, you know, integrating his artistic self with his current career. This is just like an example of what we do. And we all do this. That's the theory, is that we all do this. And so not only are these shadow elements about ourselves, but we also, as we go through life, we project these shadow elements that we don't want to look at onto other people. And that's sort of this sociological theory of where racism comes from, and other kinds of hatred on the group level towards any kind of group of people, or animals or aspects of nature. You know, it's just, you know, we literally project our own sort of self-hatred onto others, and then we punish them. We say, look at that terrible person who's so this and so that. And, you know, you really can see this in everyday life. I certainly see it in my own life. I notice I'm, like, in my head, I'm really grumpy about somebody and their behavior, and then I realize, oh, that's a trait that I have. And that's a trait about myself that I don't really like very much. And they're just doing it, and so I'm very, you know, energized by it, but it's a negative energy. Well, that's shadow energy. And so the process is called reclaiming the shadow, you know, and accepting the shadow.
Okay.
And by bringing the shadow into the light, and, you know, this sort of integration occurs with the waking ego. So how does this look in dreams? In dreams, this energy often takes the form of entity, malevolent, hateful, spiteful, ugly creatures that are scary. and this is and you see across culturally because we all tend to have sort of the same idea about what is scary, something that we can't see very well, something that might seem well. In Western culture, we have a great fear of the primitive.
Okay.
And so there's lots of there's a fear that it's like an ape-like creature or something like that. It can be just somebody, that you, like a historical figure. It can really come very clearly through. Or it can be someone like who used to bully you as a child, who shows up in your dream and is bullying you now. And you're like, hey, I'm in my 30s now. Why am I being bullied by a 10-year-old successfully? It's because that shadow energy is still present.
Okay.
So it shows up in dreams, and it certainly shows up in lucid dreams. And that, you know, because really, if you stay in a lucid dream for longer than a minute, the dream continues creating, you know, energetic situations, regardless of how self-aware we think we are. I mean, it's just, you know, the mind is still going forth, doing what it does. And so they're spontaneous elements, and they happen all the time in lucid dreams that last, you know, longer than the first, you know, moment of, well, this is exciting, I can do whatever I want, or I can manifest this object, or I can go through this portal. You know, you can do these really wonderful acts of creation in the lucid dream, but what happens next, what happens in response to your action is often unconscious. It comes from the dream, and it's spontaneous, and you don't know what it is, and it can happen in opposition to your desire, almost like playing a game. The dreaming mind is very tricky, like that. So it's a lot of fun.
If you enjoyed this episode of Cosmic Echo and would like to learn more about Ryan Hurd and his work, please visit our website at taileaters.com/CE podcast. And also there you can support our podcast by clicking on our Patreon page. We look forward to bringing you additional episodes in the near future, but until then, happy dreaming.